at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee meets the third Monday of every month at 5 o'clock p.m.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on the phone is Megan Harris. Hey, Megan.
Hey, hello.
Hi, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So, Megan, tell us a little bit about what you do, what you teach, and how long you've been a teacher.
Yeah, sure. So, my whole career has been spent in the Rochester City School District, and I am a special education teacher. That has been my tenure track for my whole career. Yeah. I've been in the district for 17 years, but I am a graduate of the district as well.
Okay.
And so, I teach mostly self-contained, which is a small classroom, which includes 12 students, myself, and a teaching assistant,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I've spent the majority of my career.
Gotcha. Okay. And what grade levels or ages are we talking about?
So I primarily work with 7th and 8th grade, which we consider middle school,
mm-hmm.
and I'm lucky enough to work at the School of the Arts, which is a really awesome place to be working.
Yeah. Okay. What inspired you to become a teacher, and what do you most enjoy about it now?
Yeah, sure. That's a pretty easy one. So, as I said, I'm a product of the Rochester City School District. I graduated back in the late 80s, and I was very, very lucky to have educators that were just awesome role models from elementary school right on up to secondary. And, you know, being, you know, under their watchful eye, you know, I felt like I needed to come back and do what they did. So it's just always been, you know, trying to emulate what those great role models did for me.
Yeah.
Excellent. Can you tell us about Rochester, especially in terms of economics?
Yeah, sure. So I did try to get the most recent information. So for 2019, this is the best information. So if you look at our overall poverty rate, it actually rose from 31.6% to 33.1%. And I know that we are considered one of the most poverty-stricken districts and cities in the country. I believe we were number 4 in the most recent list of bigger cities, or mid-sized cities, I suppose. And the percentage of children living in poverty also rose from 46.9% to 51.9%,
wow.
Which, of course, that's the group of kids that we're working with. People living in extreme poverty, or half of the poverty line, that also rose from 16% to just over 16. And we have about 32,000 people living on about $230 a week, which does not go very far. I myself,
no.
being a teacher, you would think I'd be able to
wow.
afford, you know, a nice way of living, but even houses I was outpriced of. I think the more important part, though, is to look at that women and children and minorities are the ones that are most burdened in our district
mm-hmm.
and in our city. And there's about 25,000 children in the Rochester area that live beneath the poverty line, and 7,000 of them are under the age of 5.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty dire.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to shift a little bit, but can you tell us about ROAR, your caucus, and
yeah,
sort
sure.
of how and why it was formed?
So myself and Michelle Sapir, who I know was going to appear, she was working on a show at School of the Arts, so she had to stay late for there. She and I tried to attempt a caucus last year. We had been looking at our New York State teacher retirement system, which we call NYSTERS, and we had noticed that they invest a percentage of our money. I'm trying to remember. I think it was over 2% or 3% of the money that we put in to be vested is actually being put into private prisons. Mm. And knowing that one of our, you know, bigger platforms is to work on that school-to-prison pipeline, we felt it was really important to bring that to light. But we didn't realize that forming a caucus went beyond what we were attempting. So we connected with Ellen David Friedman from UCOR, mm-hmm. and Michelle was able to find out from her a little bit more on, you know, how do you come up with a caucus? How do you create a caucus? What does a caucus look like? And it really just started with a handful of us, colleagues from different buildings. Michelle and I teach together in the same building, but we were able to connect with other teachers in other buildings that seemed to have that fire of, you know, there's lots of injustices going on, what do we do? And we were able to kind of work on going forward to this horrendous amount of layoffs and this budget crisis, and that really fired people up. And we went from a Facebook page, which has really just started as a conversation. It was just kind of like, who's feeling, you know, alienated? Who's feeling left out? Who, you know, who wants to connect? And we went from like a handful of people to 1,200 in a couple of weeks. Yeah, and that was, it's not just teachers, but it was other staff members that we work with in our buildings. So that was kind of how it came about. And, you know, we're very fresh. I mean, we met the 23rd of December. That was our first meeting of the very small, I think there were 7 or 8 of us, mm-hmm. and our student committee, I think we're at like 16 or 17. And we've been holding, you know, meetings and conference calls and just trying to really work from the ground up and connect with teachers all throughout the district.
Well, that's great. Can you just give us a sort of a brief overview of your guiding principles in your caucus?
Yeah, sure. So basically, our caucus is based on the rank and file of 3 of the 4 unions. So the unions would be RTA, which is the Rochester Teachers Association, and then there's RAP, which covers the paraprofessionals and the teaching assistants, and then BENTE are kind of the other hourly workers that might include, you know, security officers, cafeteria workers, the secretarial staff. There's a large number. And so basically our idea is to come together and to try to work on a bottom-up approach. I can really speak more specifically to RTA. I don't want to speak for the other 2 unions or union members. Mm-hmm. We don't have them on the line, but I know what we're trying to do is to try and work for a more inclusive form of union leadership, and maybe not even leadership, but more like reaching outwards to colleagues and saying, come on, let's work on these issues together, rather than looking upward and hoping that our leadership is going to solve these issues for us. Because we know strength in numbers when you're looking across the country and you're looking at, you know, LA, West Virginia, Chicago, Baltimore, you know, there's these really great movements of these large numbers of teachers that have just come together and are looking towards, you know, making their districts a place where our students are going to get everything they need. And I mean, we're still really, really new, and we do have a website, so, you know, people are welcome to take a look. It's still in its infancy, so we're still kind of working on some of those and kind of hammering out some of the details and exactly the direction we're going to go, other than working as a caucus as opposed to, you know, the corporate top-down model.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Well, the reason that we wanted to talk to somebody from Rochester is we became aware that your district intended and has since followed through on laying off quite a few teachers, around 100 teachers, not to mention people of other professions, positions in the school district, right? In the middle of the school year.
Right.
How big is Rochester? How many? So 100 or so teachers out of how many?
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of estimate because I think it's off the top of my head. We have, I think it was about 3,500 teachers, and that's not including RAP or BENTE or ASAR. ASAR is the administrative union, so I mean, mm-hmm. we're not even bringing them into play. So if we're just I can really specifically talk to RTA because I know our leadership gave us the numbers that they projected. So you're pretty much looking at, they were talking close to 300 staff, and the breakdowns were mostly teachers because according to the central office and our superintendent and the Board of Education, we're the ones who make up or comprise the majority of the staff in the district. So we're going to get the hit the hardest, funny enough.
Okay.
What ended up happening was about 93 teachers were laid off. We were able to recall some, and that was due to retirements and some resignations. So we did lose people from the district that didn't necessarily get laid off. So that did recall back a handful of folks. And then 87 teachers were displaced, meaning they were pushed out of their position and either sent to a different building or pushed out of their position and sent to another part of the building to take over a different class.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about how this all went down? How did y'all find out about it? Were you surprised?
Right. Yeah, so we knew about this budget deficit early on. Our superintendent came on, and I believe around September was when things started to come out more publicly. And we were all a little bit concerned, but we've been here before. So I don't think anybody was thinking like mid-year layoffs or even, you know, we always kind of sit on pins and needles, layoffs are coming. We didn't know what that meant. And so over the course of September, October, November into December, I know in our building, for instance, even our principal was not aware of exactly what was going to happen. I mean, they really were very tight-lipped in central office. They were not letting anything go, because sometimes you can catch a whisper, you know, or you kind of know what you're looking for. Is your building going to be on the chopping block, so to speak? And so it really wasn't until that Friday, and I think it was the 13th or the 20th, it was one of those Fridays where it finally came down the pipes and the principals were notified. And I know that many principals were able to sit down one-on-one and have that conversation and alert staff. I mean, it was really like at the 11th hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people really didn't have time to react other than to worry. I know a lot of the newer teachers in our building, you're all worried about getting caught. You know, oh my God, what am I going to do? So in terms of surprise, people really didn't know who was on the chopping block. It's supposed to be first in, last out. We do everything according to tenure.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what your, you know, amount of time is in the district will depend on whether or not you lose your spot. I had heard of some people that were losing their positions even though they had more time, and I don't have the specific details, but we do know some teachers that in their building, because the loss was so great, so they looked at one of the elementary buildings lost 20 staff members.
Wow.
And if you're going to cut that deep, it's not just going to be the first in, last out. You're going to cut deeply into those people that have many years in, and that's not what we expected. So that was really, I think, a shock to a lot of people. And I think what made it even more difficult was the displacements. Some of the displacements were absolutely horrendous for the kids. You had like a fifth grade teacher going into kindergarten or a first grade teacher going into third grade. I mean, and some people didn't even know over break. People were packing up their classrooms and preparing to move, and they're being told, you know, we don't know where you're going to be. We don't know what job you're going to have. Some people were packed up and then were told, never mind, you know, your position's safe. And there was a lot of tears. A lot of people were very upset. You know, kids had even noticed that teachers were upset. Kids were crying. I mean, it was really, it was a real emotional, it really pulled at your heartstrings. I was lucky enough our building wasn't affected in terms of teachers. We did lose some really good people, but not teachers. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine, you know, at least what the kids were feeling.
So I have a couple of questions about the situation. Well, first of all, you started to talk about the impact it had on schools and the students.
Yeah.
I mean, past the initial like shock and trauma of this, you know, severe switch up and sending people out and cutting people's jobs, What has the impact been like in the schools having so much fewer staff?
Yeah, so I know the elementaries are the schools that really got hit hard. Like I said, I know in many of the high schools, not that there weren't teachers that were lost, most, I believe, the staff were other staff. So when you're looking at a building that lost, you know, in the double digits, and I know people are scrambling, they're scrambling for curriculum, they're scrambling for materials. Our website, it was pretty cool that our Facebook page and website was able to reach out. In the Facebook page, somebody had said, hey, you know what, I've got some, you know, materials I'm not using anymore. Does anybody need them? I mean, in one respect, it's like, that's really awesome that we all came together and everyone was offering, you know, what do you need? What can I get for you? I've sat and I've planned with teachers who just don't know, who are newer teachers, who are just so overwhelmed and in that, you know, they're just kind of like the fight or flight mode. You know, they're just going day to day. And you think, oh, that's great. You know, we all came together, but where was central office?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where was the union? Where are all these people that are supposed to be coming in and, you know, helping these teachers out? And we're reaching our hand out, and people are like, oh my God, thank God there's mm-hmm. somebody out there, you know, that are reaching out and saying, what can I do for you? And I mean, that's what we should do as colleagues anyway. But there were also people that are like, well, I'm going to go in and I'm going to volunteer in my classroom until things are better because I'm laid off. And, you know, you guys are teachers. So you know, we've got the biggest hearts there are, and you'll do anything for your kids. And people were just like bending over backwards. It was mostly for the kids more than anything else. And people didn't want to leave their kids. They didn't want to leave, you know, those precious ones that you've spent almost five months, you know, nurturing and taking through the year. And I just think that it was just unfortunate that the cuts happened when they did. I mean, the urgency, I don't know, it's still, we don't feel there's a lot of transparency. Like, we're still weeding through
Surprising, because usually there is a lot of transparency around these issues, right?
Good one, Stephen.
Well, yeah, you would hope. I mean, and again, I'm not saying that there isn't, like, numbers out there. Like, it's not like you can't go in and you can't, like, crunch numbers and look at data, but there was definitely this nuance of behind closed doors, conversations, Board of Education. You know, it was really heartening. And if anybody, our Board of Education meetings are all online, and when the kids went and spoke, I mean, you're just like, oh my God, like little ones, you know, mm-hmm. they're like, don't take my teachers. And you know, the board is like, oh, you know, this is so heartfelt. But they had their decision made before that all even happened. I think that's the part that makes it feel so closed door or not transparent. It felt like all the decisions had already been made. Like, they had talked about it, they had discussed it, they had decided. And they were just kind of giving the open forum as an illusion of, look, we're going to open it up to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there were protests. They flooded the Board of Education that night that they were voting on it. I mean, it was like a packed house. Parents were there, kids were there, teachers were there. You know, other staff members. People were pouring their hearts out. People were crying, and they're like, "Oh, thanks so much." And then, like, they leave and they come back and like, "Okay, well, we're going to vote on this anyway." And sorry, you know. So that's where it doesn't feel like there's that transparency. I mean, it could be a little conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's sounds like a...
Sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately, right?
Yeah. Well, I was also wondering, you talked a little bit about this, what the stated reasons for the cuts and why they had to happen mid-year and what you think are maybe the real reasons, if you think there's a different reason.
Yeah, I don't think that the reasons are unclear. So we've got a couple things going on. So the one thing is just the straight-up budget deficit. We have a deficit, and we know that there's money that's not there. We're trying to crunch the numbers as we're, you know, we've been sitting down talking about, like, looking at the breakdown, trying to go through the budget ourselves, and that's, you know, one thing as teachers we may never think about, you know, those board resolutions, the budget. I mean, that's kind of something we probably should know as well as our contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a conversation we've been having. So when you look at this budget deficit, it started out with $30 million projected for this year, and I think $34 million for next year. That was the projection. So the cuts were supposed to cover this year, and they're supposed to be, rumor has it, that there's another round of cuts, and our superintendent just put out there in the last week that everything's back on the table. So they took stuff off the table after this last round of cuts, but now he's stated, you know, so everything's back on the table. And so we're looking at a possible another round of really deep cuts in June. We have no idea who's going to get them, where they're going to happen. Is it going to hit high school now? Is it going back? I mean, we really are. This is what I mean about closed door conversations. Like,
yeah.
We're all just kind of sitting on, like, whose job is next on the chopping block?
And
so
is this...
with that in mind, right? And with that in mind, I know that part of that is there are budget issues and mismanagement of funds. And that's why the state comptroller has been in, and they're putting together a report to help us understand where this money was spent. Not necessarily, I mean, I'm not saying that anybody stole it. They're just, the understanding is that the projection, so for instance, for healthcare, you know, every year we know healthcare goes up. And we know that everybody in the district has healthcare. And what people might not understand, we have four unions. We all buy into the same healthcare so that we could make it cheaper for the district. That was something that we all agreed on a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't project those numbers to go up. They project them either to, and I can't remember if it was to stay the same or to be less. Like, I mean, how do you do that? That's just very odd.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't project for the charter schools, and that's, of course, a whole nother, you could, like, talk about that forever. We have, I believe, about 12 charter schools, and we pay them over $80 million
to
stay open, because our funding that we get for our district pays for the charter schools. So there's a huge chunk of money. They also didn't project that correctly. So there's some interesting, you know, financial issues going on in terms of budget. And then even on top of that, the state owes us money. So one of the things people may not be aware of is that we have money that comes to us, and I had pulled out my notes for this because I wanted to make sure I got this right. So in the city of Rochester, see if I can find my information here, we have we get state aid, right? All the districts get a little bit of aid, but depending on where you are and what the calculation is, we have a foundation aid. So that's what it's called. And this foundation aid was enacted back in 07-08, and we were supposed to be getting a certain amount of money from the state. So at this point, if you look at the money that we are supposed to have gotten, it's about $86 million that we are owed by the state. And this is just money that was supposed to keep our district running. So even if you get rid of the mismanagement and, you know, the charter schools and all those other things, the state owes us money. And mm-hmm. we actually went to court, and we did fight against that, and we won. And they still haven't given us the money. So, you know, that's kind of another, you know, place where that aid is supposed to come from. Our city, the city council, is also supposed to up the amount of revenue that the city pays us. And from some number crunching that we did, we have not seen a change in contributions from the city revenue in, I believe, well over a decade.
Wow.
So there's a lot of areas where money could be coming from.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying if there was mismanagement, there's mismanagement, and you could throw like $100 million at us and it wouldn't matter. But to help cover, you know, the $86 million, we're about $80 million or so that we owe for charter schools. You know, that's almost like a wash
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of money that we're not getting. So I don't think that part of it is necessarily not information that we can't look up, but you do have to kind of dig deep to see where things are going in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, hopefully that kind of gives a good understanding of where we are. We are now projected for next year to be $60 million in deficit. So
wow.
The number's gone up. It's not even like the 30 plus the 34. Now we've like done all these cuts and we've, you know, given back millions of dollars to all these people we lost. And now they're still projecting $60 million as a deficit for our budget.
This sounds like a textbook scenario for how the privatizers are attempting to dismantle our public education system.
Oh, yeah.
Right, through these austerity cuts and these cries of there just isn't any money.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and if you look, was it Florida, the district down in Florida, Miami-Dade, that when they went on strike, all of a sudden they were like, oh, look, we just found $140 million. Sorry. I think that's there was a big strike down there where they were kind of in a similar, circumstance. And their caucus was a little bit more, formed, and they had a lot more people on their side. And all of a sudden, they found all of almost $150 million, $145 million that all of a sudden they were able to fund those schools. I mean, the money is there.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just, I don't know who's getting it. It's not us.
Well, I read somewhere that you have about 100 billionaires in the state of New York, so I imagine that they are doing quite well and not too concerned about all of this.
Well, yeah. My understanding is that a lot of people who, if you even just look federally, you talk about, many of our elected officials, they don't send their kids to city schools. They send their kids to private schools, right? They send their kids to charter schools. Mm-hmm. They send their kids to schools in the suburbs that have really high numbers for graduation or high, exam numbers or whatever you're measuring depending on where you are in the country. But I know that you guys were looking for some information on our current governor. And I can tell you that, as I said, they owe us money. You're right about the fact that he does not want to tax the rich. It is not something in a progressive state that Democratic governors usually go that route.
We are familiar with that.
Yes. it's like I said, it's textbook. It's all textbook. There's a pattern. Yeah. It's really not unusual at all. Megan, we are getting close to the end of our time.
Yeah, sure.
And I know we want to hear a little bit about the fight back. And I guess I just want to ask you just bluntly, do you feel like your union leadership really did enough? I mean, if everybody had just walked out and said, we're not going for this, maybe there would have been a different result. What are your thoughts?
Well, we've had strikes here in the city, and I did have an opportunity to talk. I was a student when the last strike happened in 1980. I recall that. And it's interesting that people have different perspectives on what that strike was or why they had it. So not saying that strikes don't work. Unfortunately, in our district, we're so fragmented and we're so isolated by building and even sometimes within our building. The whole purpose of the caucus is to try and break that isolation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm sure if we had one huge action, if we could get 75%, 80%, 100% of union membership, rank and file members to walk out, that would say something. Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of connectedness in our district. So that's what we're organizing for. There's a parent caucus that has erupted from all of this, and they're working on the community end. There's a lot of community leaders, educational advocates. I mean, there's lots of people on the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
The leadership, both at central office, Board of Education, they're not moving. I was at a school tonight that's getting ready to close. The whole staff is like, yeah, this is great. We don't mind it's closing. We don't mind that we're going to change it into something else. There's a lot of people that are apathetic or just,
exhausted.
They're just doing the best. Yeah, exhausted. Yeah. Just doing the best they can do. And we're trying to work that angle. Like, come on, we need you all, to come together so that we can fight back against this. I think for you, and again, I can't speak for the other two unions, but we, for the Rochester Teacher Association, we would have liked to have seen some more action-oriented, not just let's wear red shirts for Red for Ed, let's go to Albany, which never works, by the way, and ask for money because they can say, oh yeah, and then you're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for more actionable things. We did start a petition that we're trying to work building to building to say that we're not going to take anything less than bringing back those teachers. And even that's been really hard in some buildings. People just are scared or just really don't know what's going on. They're not as informed. And that's kind of part of what we're trying to do, I guess.
Well, Megan, I'm so sorry to have to cut you off. This has been really super informative, and I'm excited to see Roar, follow you on Facebook and see what's happening in Rochester. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on KBOO.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for having us, for sure.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to have you back and hear about your big wins. So thanks to our engineer. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO's news and public affairs programs are fueled by our volunteers, and we are always looking for more people to get involved. On Tuesday, February 11th, from 5 to 6 p.m., we will be holding a news and public affairs orientation. This training will offer a crash course in news production and public affairs. In just an hour, we will cover our philosophy, our expectations, how it all comes together, and how you can get started with us. Again, that's the News and Public Affairs Orientation on Tuesday, February 11th from 5 to 6 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Sign up on VicNet or email newsdirector@kvu.org to get registered. See you there!